Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello friends, it's Emma here. Your podcast feed might look a little bit confusing this morning because there's not one but two episodes that have been released in the last, well, few hours. We put out a very quick episode last night because I managed to get the Director of Compliance and Information at the HFEA on the phone. I essentially spent 10 minutes asking her when IVF treatment in the UK is going to resume. She didn't answer, or she didn't give me a date, but she did kind of give a little bit of guidance. So if you're somebody whose cycle has been cancelled and you're not sure what's going to happen next, it's definitely worth a listen. If not, listen to this episode. It's also really great. Either way, enjoy. Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about IVF, infertility, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Hey!
Welcome to the episode! Da, 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 da.
May, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I was glum because I read the newspaper this morning. I'm not going to dwell on that. Then I had some pancakes with maple syrup and bacon. So now I am much greatly cheered.
Sounds like your Sunday morning has been a roller coaster ride of emotions.
It really has, man. It really has. But now I'm at the top of the peak, so I'm happy.
Cool.
And yeah, I'm good. What have I been doing this week? So I've got a slightly funny corona-based story. It's not actually that funny. It's just weird. So
okay.
I don't have any clothes at the moment. I haven't bought clothes for ages. I need some new clothes, right? This is the sitch.
Right.
So I ordered some clothes from Zara. And they arrived. So it had an email saying they've been delivered. And I was like, no, they haven't. So I looked at the email and it showed me a picture of the package that had been left in my porch. I don't have a porch, and it was my old workplace, and I was like, oh man, bollocks. I don't even work there anymore, and funnily enough, no, neither does anyone else, because obviously the office is closed. So I was like, fuck, that's really fucking annoying. And I just later that day I texted my mate who does work there, and was like, oh, you never guess what I've done, what a douchebag. And she was like, dude, I'm around the corner. Like, I'm on a walk and I'm around the corner from the office. I'll go and grab it. I was like, oh my God. What are the chances? She doesn't live near the office, neither do I. What are the chances?
That's amazing.
I know.
It's like you had a psychic connection.
I know. It really was. So then I did nothing for 2 weeks because I'm stupid. And then I texted the other day and I was like, mate, I'm going to, I've worked out how to come to your house to come and get the package. Like, when should I come? And she's like, dude, I've got coronavirus. And I was like, what? Do you know, like, when someone you know, like, you just, I don't know about you, I just don't really think that someone I know is going to get it. Like, I feel like, I know a few people that have had it, but not really. And I was like, she's quite shocked. I shouldn't be shocked. Loads of people have it. But yeah, it was just
my friend's husband got it, but she didn't get it.
Interesting. Same with me.
Yeah. Quite impressive.
Yeah. But so yeah, so
that's,
my
that's some epic social distancing happening. Internal social distancing.
That is incredible. How do you even do that? This poor girl, she lives in a flat share. So Ooh. She's quarantined in a bedroom. She's not allowed to leave the room. Suze, if you're listening, get well soon. Not just because I want my clothes, just because I want you to be healthy. Yeah, so God, coronavirus, fuck off.
Yeah.
Fuck off, Corona.
So at the beginning of this year, I made a kind of a resolution not to buy, or like to really minimise the number of new clothes that I buy.
Mm. That's a good idea.
Style rather than buying. I can't remember what the hashtag is. Anyway, I really need some new jeans.
I honestly needed new clothes, like, to practical reasons. I don't have anything that is good for the summer weather. And so, yeah, I was just like, I'll just do a small little shop, you know, drop 100 quid. It'll get me through the summer. Yeah. No, it won't. Because it's an elephant in castle. And I can't get to it. fun times. Bad. What have you been up to, mate?
Not really anything. So I've got in my house, I've got a bay window on the first floor, and I've really taken to just sitting there staring at people.
It's a beautiful bay window. I can confirm.
Yeah, I'm just obsessed with just like watching what goes on my street, and no one ever looks up, so you can really have a good nose.
Oh, nice. That's
really
good.
Have a good nose at people. Yeah. Which is how I spotted one of my neighbours who was heavily pregnant having a fag.
A fag?
A fag.
Oh my God.
We are not. Look, far be it from me to judge other people, but I've had that thing. Basically, that thing has come back where I get a bit jealous of other people being pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect it to come back so soon. To be honest, I didn't expect it to ever come back.
Mm-hmm.
But
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that ever really goes, does it? I think there's something so, because it was such a, I wouldn't say trauma, but like seeing pregnancy announcements all the time when you're really trying, it impacts you so much. I think you're always going to have this weird thing, like even if it's unconscious, it's like, ugh.
Yeah. Well, shall I tell you what triggered it?
Go ahead.
Do you remember my old friend Delicious Liella?
I do remember your old friend Delicious Liella, yeah.
Who got pregnant at the same time as me.
Your prego twin.
Yeah, and I basically automatically thought, well, that means I'm not having a baby because she's going to have the baby, the only baby that's available at that time.
At that time, yeah. That's famously how it works.
Yeah, and I just had a bit of an insane moment where I went, I just lost it. I've since listened to a podcast with her and she's a really nice person and very smart and business savvy, and I just want to put it out there that she's nice.
Yeah, but also isn't a beef. You're not starting some sort of
I don't have beef with Delicious
rivalry.
Liella. No, and some of her recipes are very good.
Do you partake of her energy bars?
I do. Yeah, okay, because of aforementioned dairy issues. Yeah. She's actually one of the few like go-to snack options if you're like somewhere and you're hungry.
Yeah.
Anyway, she is pregnant again.
I mean, that's pretty quick.
Yeah. And I lost it again. I did not this time think, well, she's having a baby, so I'll probably never have another one. Nor have I decided whether I want another one.
No.
Like, whether I want to go through IVF again, because I'm not sure I do. But I still lost it, because brains are funny things, aren't they?
They really are, man. There's no rhyme or reason. But it is frustrating, isn't it? Because it's like, wow, you know, she's pregnant again. It's not fair. Yeah.
So I saw this neighbour of mine having a cigarette in her swimming costume with a big pregnant belly. And again, I lost it. And again, I have no right to judge other people and how they behave. But I just, she's got a lot of children, this neighbour, and now she's having another one. And obviously she's so casual about her kids, this is how my brain went, that she can just have a fag.
Yeah.
And I got annoyed. And then I had to give myself a talking to.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because you're right, we don't want to be judgy of other people's life choices. However, that is very annoying to see. It's just always a bit of a shocker to see as well, because you don't, it's not a common thing to see, is it? thankfully.
Yeah. It's just, do you know what it is? It's just another sign that all that stuff that you have, all that stuff that infertility creates, it just doesn't go. It's a trauma that you go through and it doesn't just vanish.
No. No, definitely not.
So I've had quite a philosophical week thinking about that kind of thing.
Have you watched Unorthodox?
No, but I've heard it's really good. My mum told me to watch it.
It is very good. It's interesting for me because I used to live in Stoke Newington, which is a area with high density of Orthodox Jews, and then unorthodox me. We were like the only ones on the street that weren't, pretty much, which is quite funny. So it was interesting to watch it. And yeah, so obviously there's a storyline that this girl's trying to get pregnant, and it's like, oh my God, that is intense. Huge expectations. And the guys aren't really supposed to masturbate, so that makes IVF a bit tricky, I believe.
Anyway, shall we talk about the show?
Today's episode, you've been chatting to a professor.
I've been talking to a very nice professor about endometriosis.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, we're only 3 series in now.
Yeah.
It's taken us a long time.
It has.
This isn't through want of trying. We've been trying for months to get somebody on to talk about endometriosis. Turns out I was going down the wrong route. So I ended up getting this interview by contacting the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. They are really helpful and nice.
Thankfully.
Yeah, so they referred me to Professor Andrew Horn. He's a professor of gynecology and reproductive medicine at Edinburgh University. He specialises in endometriosis. He knows everything there is to know about endometriosis. And he's a very nice man.
Fantastic. Well, that is a fantastic interview.
Yeah, really good interview, really good chatter. This is such an interesting episode because it just really highlights how endometriosis is like a thing that we really don't understand at all.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we've been trying to get, I mean, my constant messages to Lena Dunham to come on the show have been largely ignored, unfortunately. but, you know, I think Alexa Chung as well is another celeb that's come out of and admitted to, and and said that she has it. So we're going to continue to try and get someone to come on and talk about their own endometriosis.
Meanwhile, on the episode, we have got Liz and Nick. They are meeting some adoptive parents this week.
They sure are. And we've also got, obviously, Professor Tim talking about the difference between fresh and frozen transfers.
I mean, that's something that blew my mind when I was first starting IVF.
Yeah, it is bizarre.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
We've had some really nice messages this week about the new format of the show, so thank you and keep those coming. If there's any thoughts you have, you can contact us on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative. Blah, 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 blah. At Big Fat Negative.
On Facebook.
At Big Fat Negative.
On Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
Or you can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
We'd also love it if you hit the subscribe button, if you haven't already.
Yes, please.
And if you left us a little review or a little rating.
That would be amazing. We'd love it very much.
Yes. Other than that, please enjoy the episode.
Yep, enjoy.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right.
So, what's been going on?
Well, we actually met some actual real-life adopters this week.
Indeed we did.
How did you find it?
I enjoyed it. They're very nice people.
Yeah?
Very nice family.
Do you want to give a bit of an overview as to how we located these people?
Well, as in, from your dad? Yeah. I don't know the entire connection between your dad, but your dad knew of someone that was going through the adoption process at some point. Is that correct?
Yeah. So basically, my dad introduced me to this lady who, her and husband have adopted their little boy. And when we first sort of talked about the fact that we were considering adoption as a potential way forward for creating our family, my dad's like, oh my God, I know somebody. Speak to them. So he basically forced this poor woman to talk to me. But actually, it was really helpful, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think when you say forced, I think they're very pro-adoption, not just in the fact that they've adopted, but they're almost, is activist too strong a word, but more like they're involved in the adoption process for other people.
Yeah, for sure. They're definite advocates for...
Yeah, that's like, the word I was looking for more than activist.
They're not extremists. Yeah. No, they're definite advocates, aren't they, for adoption. And this is like, as far as they're concerned, 100% how you should create your family.
Yeah, but they said that they'd gone through other alternative routes before this.
Yeah, they had.
I think... From what I gathered, it was more of a going through the motions, but adoption was always the more positive side of things.
Yeah, I think from what they said, it was definitely on the cards.
Yeah.
For them, always. So, yeah, so we'd already chatted with them on the phone, and they were coming up to up our way. So we arranged to meet with them face-to-face and with their little boy.
Yep.
How did you feel beforehand?
A bit nervous, like you are when you meet any new people.
Yeah, I felt a little bit like a blind date.
Yeah.
It was, because obviously, like I said, we'd spoken with her on the phone and everything, and she was really lovely. Yeah. But yeah, I was definitely quite apprehensive before we went to meet them.
Yeah, because I've never met anyone in that situation that I've known of.
What, as in an adopter?
Yeah, and you're going there to specifically speak about it as well.
Yeah, and I guess they really felt our nervousness, I think, didn't they? Because they really, like, to start off with, drove the conversation.
Yeah.
Did you kind of, get the answers that you wanted from the... Like, did you find it a beneficial chat?
I think it was very beneficial. And it's even just nice to see how they all interact together because they were a lovely little family, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. It was absolutely gorgeous. You know, you wouldn't have known that they weren't... You know, that they hadn't sort of birthed this. I don't know if that's probably not the right term. Yeah. Basically, you wouldn't have known any different.
No.
Not that they were... shy and coming forward about
it's part of their life, isn't it? It's part of their family, that adoption's part of their family, and they don't shy away from it. And maybe you're encouraged to anymore either,
not at all. It was quite weird actually, because like we were sat in the middle of this cafe, and even though I'm obviously quite open on my Instagram and I chat away quite merrily, I generally do it in the privacy of my own home.
Yeah.
And talking about it, not a whispered level,
no,
in the middle of a cafe, I was really conscious.
But it's good that you can do it. You shouldn't have to whisper it in the corner.
No, I know.
That's the whole point.
But I felt quite self-conscious when we first got there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I was okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you bring it up to people in work and stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, you're better than me.
I think it's, you know, like, the whole thing of control the laughter at you. That's what I always felt. Sometimes I think it is. You just can, if you bring it up, you're in control of the conversation and the information.
Yeah. I guess I hadn't really looked at it that way.
So. And most of it, and I only bring it up to people I get on with. As a normal part of life, and I just sort of normalise it, just to sort of do it. And it's not feeling sorry for myself or anything. It's just this is what we're doing.
Yeah, I suppose if you, like you say, you're in control of the narrative then, aren't
you?
Yeah. I had never thought of it like that before.
No.
You've opened my eyes.
Good. Free your mind.
So, was there anything in particular that you'd hoped to get from this conversation?
It's just a real world picture of what it's like. And I think they're very, very much almost best case scenario. That's how I'd imagine it from my point. Because, you know, they... And I think that's how I would want to do it. Is they got him when he was very young.
Mm.
And, yeah, it's all worked out very nicely.
Mm.
It seems that obviously it's only a brief conversation with them. They could feel differently, but I didn't get that vibe. They were having a great old time. They at present they don't seem to have had any problems like that were brought up in the meeting, the information evening.
No, so you know there aren't any major sort of behavioural issues or anything like that. And yeah, I think you're definitely right. Like, they've been very fortunate in the fact that they have just adopted a really lovely, sweet little boy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's, as far as they're concerned, you know, they, I wouldn't say they treat him like they would any other child, but I don't really mean it like that. I mean, you know, they've normalised his upbringing, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't come away from it feeling like I had more answers than I had from the information evening, I guess.
You didn't?
No. It was really nice to meet with them, and nothing that they said sort of, or nothing that I witnessed kind of made me think, oh, yeah, yeah, definitely adoption is for us. It was just like meeting another like nice family.
Yeah.
I think there were a few things that they said that kind of, I don't know, didn't sit comfortably with me, I don't think.
And what were they?
Just obviously, you know, they're talking about expanding their family and very much coming at it from, like, almost the other side.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, the side of success.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of one of the comments, as you know, from their perspective was, well, we wouldn't ever go back, as in, you know, if we wanted to expand our family, then adoption is definitely the way that we would continue to want to do that. But I think, like you said, they've had a really positive and successful adoption, which was lovely to see. But it almost felt like, I don't know, like, I'm probably not explaining myself particularly well, but I think it was the wording that she used, in that, oh, there's so many kids that need to, you know, adoptive families, that need forever families. I just couldn't, in all good conscience, not grow my family that way. And I think I didn't feel judged, but I definitely felt like a bit stung, I guess. Because obviously we're still thinking about whether or not that's the right path for us.
Well, I think from their point of view, they're trying to show people how successful and how good adoption is and can be, and not necessarily to limit yourself by IVF, and you're not going to have necessarily any happier experience from IVF than you would adoption. I think that's their outlook on life now, and especially, but obviously they've gone through the stages of trying IVF themselves and then deciding to go for adoption. From the sounds of it, they cope with it very well and very matter-of-factly when they were told they couldn't have children themselves.
Yeah.
And they needed, and they were quite happy to move on. So they're coming from a different headspace anyway, and everyone's different.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I think their experience is very different to ours.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah, I guess you want the people that you meet to sort of almost agree with...
Yeah.
Not agree with your perspective, but, like, you know, be on the same sort of, like, wavelength as you. And as much as, you know, like I said, they were really lovely people, they are, like you say, they cope, you know, they made that decision... virtually having had, you know, one unsuccessful round of IVF, and they just cut their losses and they moved on. And I guess I was almost a bit envious of them.
Yeah, I think I can get that. I mean, because I think you just want to have that decision firm in your mind, what you want to do.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, nothing at the moment is really, like... I don't know, it's not really swaying me one way or the other, I suppose. And I want to make sure that we're giving both options, like, equal consideration, because I think that's fair and that's right. But it's really hard to... Like, still, I just don't feel that kind of emotional connection with adoption at the moment, and I don't know why that is. But then I wouldn't necessarily that I feel that emotional connection with donor either.
I can't. I feel more of an emotional connection with adoption because I can see parenthood.
Yeah.
so I can see what the goal is and what you're getting from it.
Yeah.
The only way I get at the moment feels like more IVF.
Yeah, which
and
it is.
I was like, the guy yesterday, like, yeah, I didn't find IVF a positive experience.
No.
It's a necessary evil.
Yeah.
To go through, and I understand why we need to go through it, and that's not me saying I don't want to do it anymore, but it's that I can't get any emotional connection to it because it's a medical procedure at the moment. So I think probably is why I sort of look more positive at adoption, because I can see the goal is parenthood, and that's what that shows me.
Yeah, I get that.
Whereas all the information you have about IVF and donor eggs is the scientific.
It's very clinical,
isn't it? Yeah, very clinical. So you don't, it's no like, they don't talk to you about being a parent afterwards. So this is not much mention of family. It's very much, this is what you need to do. These are your options. These are the costs. This is what the procedure. This is where I come in.
Yeah. I think you've always struggled a little bit with the clinical elements of it, though, haven't you? Like, we've been to a few Fertility Network meetings together because, you know, again, we were searching for a firm, visible support network, I guess, you know, beyond, obviously, the internet. And when we had speakers, I found that really helpful to kind of be given the facts and the figures, but you always really struggled with that clinical element of it, didn't you?
I know my medical conditions. I don't need to be told them again.
Yeah.
And some speakers, I think it was some speakers were better than others. I just remember one that seemed to zero in on what my issue and was really quite negative about it, and that upset me.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
Because I've already gone through that before. I didn't really need to go for it again.
No, like you know, as far as you know, what, like, you've had that emotional experience of being told and having to sort of process.
And it's hard not to feel guilty about it. So when another medical person, if that particular one felt like I was being judged, I know he wasn't judging me. But it just leads back to those feelings of guilt that I can't do something that I should be able to do.
Yeah, well, I get that. Because I feel exactly the same way. Sorry, we've gone on a bit of a negative tangent here. But I think it's important to sort of talk about, maybe that's why you have such negative feelings towards IVF, because of the clinical element of it. Because you haven't had positive experiences of in clinical environments.
Isn't it? All we've had is we haven't been successful.
No.
So I'm sure if we are successful, it'll be a different, you'll not think back fondly for it, but it'll be like, yeah, it was all worth it.
Yeah, exactly. And at the moment, we still don't know that. Whereas, like you say, with adoption, you know that at the end of it, there is that parenthood, there is that family, virtually guaranteed, really, unless you've done something really, really, really bad. We're still not sure.
I think I need to see more of the worst case scenarios.
For adoption?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to have that sort of more rounded
view of it.
Yeah. Could you say, if you had to decide tomorrow, which way you would lean to?
I think so.
What would you say?
I think I'd go donor.
Yeah?
Yeah. But then I think that is because I haven't felt that physical connection, that emotional connection yet. You know, like I said, it was lovely to see the family yesterday. But it was still, I don't know, I just felt quite removed from it still.
Okay.
I don't know why. I don't know why that is. I always thought, actually, that I would be the other way around. That I would be very emotionally connected, very emotionally invested in wanting to bring a small person into our family who, you know, who could give us what we needed, but also we could give them what they needed.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if I'm there yet.
Well, that's exactly what you're doing with donor eggs.
Well, yeah. But I mean, you know, this is why we're doing this, I suppose, isn't it? To try and suss out where we want to go. What about you? If you had to say tomorrow, what would your preferred option be?
Probably the other way. I did feel a bit of a, like... I did like the scene. I did like the family.
Yeah.
But then I haven't... I've always said I don't really care how it happens, as long as it happens.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be like... If you didn't feel that emotional connection to adoption, then it wouldn't... I wouldn't be like tragic. I wouldn't be in tears and I'll come my way. I don't want this. I don't think it'd be a deal breaker.
No.
It wouldn't be a deal breaker. It just... We just... I'd be really happy just to have a child. Mm. So... So... If Dana gets us there... I think the issue I had with Dana, it doesn't... As long as it doesn't matter to you, but I always felt like if IVF didn't work for us... If we can't have a child that's both part of me and part of you, then why not just adopt?
This is the question. This is the question. But I think, yeah, maybe we just need to explore it further.
I know there's that, all the surroundingness of pregnancy and the connection you would get of a child from there and... knowing that you could be more in control of the development at that stage.
Yeah.
That's all really important. I was also a bit... The whole... When they said 50%, I thought it was going to be... I thought, no, we're doing this because the chances are 70%.
Yeah.
But... is what it is.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, you know, just because today I think, you know, I'd probably go that way doesn't mean to say that I've made up my mind.
No. Nor have I. I've only seen the good side so far.
So that's our mission, really, is to try and get a better, more rounded view. And next week, we actually go back to our IVF clinic. In fact, we've got our follow-up appointment.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. We've got our follow-up appointment with the clinic next week. So we'll see what their thoughts and suggestions are.
I always think it can't get any worse, but they always come and surprise me.
Yeah, so watch this space and we will update you next week.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, Andrew, thank you so much for being part of the show. We've been meaning to do this for such a long time.
Pleasure. Yeah, good to meet you.
So I'll start kind of, you know, right at the top. What is endometriosis? We're told it's bits of womb lining outside the womb, but I don't really understand how it gets there.
Endometriosis is a chronic pain condition, and it's mm-hmm. defined by the presence of tissue that's like the lining of the womb outside of the womb.
Okay.
Most commonly on the lining of the pelvis, but it can be also found on the ovaries, causing cysts within the ovaries.
Okay.
Or it can even be found on the bowel or the bladder. And the problem is that this tissue outside of the womb behaves differently, and it can lead to very debilitating pain. And the condition itself can also be associated with difficulty getting pregnant.
Why does it cause pain?
Very good question. Mm. We don't really know why endometriosis causes pain. We think it's because the disease, when it's outside of the womb, develops its own blood and nerve supply. So that in itself can lead to pain. The lesions outside of the womb also cause inflammation, they cause scarring. That in itself can cause pain. And then the disease itself can also, it seems, have an influence on the nervous system, both the peripheral and nervous system, leading to pain, not just within the pelvis and where the lesions themselves are, but also outside of the pelvis. And that's why endometriosis can sometimes be associated with other conditions like migraines or fibromyalgia.
I was actually going to ask that question because a friend of mine was saying that she, whenever she gets it, she gets real bad pain in her legs.
So that could be for a number of reasons. It could be because, as I say, because of damage to the nervous system, mm-hmm. more generally, or it could be because a lesion, some of the disease is sitting near a nerve that's running into the leg. Or it could be because if you've had pain for a long time, you become more sensitive to pain elsewhere in the body.
Okay. So anybody who suffers with endometriosis is going to kind of kill me for asking this question, but how do you know you don't just have quite bad period pains?
Well, I always say to patients or people who think they might have endometriosis is that if they have pain that's interfering with their quality of life, with mm-hmm. their ability to work, with their relationships, that's not normal pain. And that's when they need to go and seek help. And they need to then ask their general practitioner, their doctor, to investigate them for the condition.
Yeah. And I mean, diagnosis is something a lot of people have trouble with. Are there any other symptoms that are associated with it that would make a doctor say this is definitely endometriosis?
We always say to patients and to doctors who are perhaps less familiar with endometriosis that when a pain has what we call a cyclical pattern, so it appears at the same time every month, and that doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily need to be when you have your periods, that could be in the middle of your cycle or at other okay. times, that's what we call a red flag symptom for endometriosis. So that should then alert the doctor to investigate you further.
Now, a few months ago, we spoke to one doctor who said that endometriosis should be diagnosed based on symptoms. You shouldn't require scans. Is that something you can do?
So the definition of endometriosis is the presence of the endometrial, the womb lining like tissue outside of the womb. And that can sometimes show up on scans, particularly mm-hmm. if it forms a cyst. But to be able to actually properly see it, you really need to do surgery, which is laparoscopic or keyhole surgery.
Okay.
However, the symptoms of endometriosis, as I said, if you have cyclical pain, very severe period pain, pain with sex, sometimes pain opening your bowels or your bladders, so that can strongly indicate that you might have endometriosis. But really, to get a proper diagnosis, that needs to be done by a surgery, and that's a keyhole surgery.
Okay. I mean, you know, I've spoken to one person who had a scan once and was told that it was completely clear and she was fine. Went back for another scan and was told that she had very severe scarring on her uterus. How is that possible?
So it's very difficult often to diagnose endometriosis on a scan unless it forms quite extensive disease,
right.
Either what we call nodules of endometriosis or it forms cysts on the ovaries. But the commonest type of endometriosis is very diffuse, small areas of disease, which is often widespread on the lining of the womb, and that doesn't mm-hmm. show up on scans. So it's possible that a patient might go for a scan, perhaps in a less experienced person, and that disease might not show up. So
okay.
Sometimes it is worth going for a second opinion if you feel that you're not being given the appropriate care or the appropriate diagnosis.
So if you're going to your GP, should you be requesting a laparoscopy referral straight away, or you know, is a scan okay in the first instance?
We've got very good guidelines for women with suspected endometriosis in the UK, which are set out by NICE. And NICE suggests that anyone with suspected endometriosis should have an appropriate history taken, asked about their symptoms, an examination, and go for a scan. And then if endometriosis is suspected, it's very reasonable to try a simple treatment for endometriosis for the first few months, for example, pain-killing medication or hormones, which can often be very effective to suppress the symptoms.
Okay.
If these work and if the patient is happy with this approach, that's perfectly reasonable to continue. But it's in situations where these simple measures don't work. And in these situations, I think it is important that the patient is then referred into secondary care to discuss whether or not they want to proceed with a laparoscopy to further investigate and often treat their pain.
So that was going to be my next question. Is there a cure for endometriosis?
Sadly, there isn't a cure for endometriosis. There are a number of women who get significantly better, either with surgery or with medical management. And medical management involves giving treatments which stop the ovaries producing estrogen, because we know that endometriosis is an estrogen-dependent condition. Unfortunately, both of these approaches don't always work in the longer term, and we know that women who've had surgery to remove the disease, up to 50% of them after 5 years will have a recurrence of their symptoms.
Okay.
And we also know that in women who have medical management, with usually with hormones, that about a third of them will not be satisfied with this treatment approach. So we're really crying out for better treatments for women with endometriosis.
So what is excision surgery?
So there's a lot of discussion about surgery on social media.
Okay.
And essentially what you want to do is try and remove all of the disease that you see at the time of surgery, if this is possible. And that can either be by excising it, which essentially means cutting it out by whatever it means,
okay,
or it can be by destroying it. And that can be with laser, can be with diathermy, which is burning it away. And there's a lot of discussion about which is better. And we don't really know which is the better approach. And sometimes, certainly my opinion is you need a combination of both approaches, because clearly cutting or destroying something near the bowel or the bladder could have an impact on the function of your bowel or your bladder. So it's really important that the surgeon is experienced in endometriosis surgery and uses the most appropriate and safest approach.
And also, I wanted to have a quick chat about the language, because, you know, when I was going through IVF, they said they found an endometrioma on my ovary. And they said, I said, well, does that mean I have endometriosis? And they went, oh, well, technically, yeah. And I didn't really understand what that, I mean, what's the difference between an endometrioma and endometriosis?
So endometriosis is unlikely to be just one single condition. So endometriosis, I think my feeling, is really an umbrella term for different subtypes of disease.
Okay.
Which may have different, what we call etiologies. So they may be caused by different things, different genes. At the moment, we think there are three subtypes of endometriosis. One is called peritoneal disease. So this is the disease that we see on the lining of the pelvis, which is often very difficult to see on scans. The second type is ovarian disease, which forms cysts on the ovaries, which are also called endometrioma or chocolate cysts. And then the third type is what we call deep disease, which often forms nodules near the bowel or the bladder.
Okay. So if you have an endometrioma, that's a sign of one of the types of endometriosis.
Yes, an endometrioma is endometriosis.
Good to know. okay, well, obviously we are a fertility podcast. So I wanted to move on to its effect on fertility. You talked a bit about the treatment there, one of them being hormones. Obviously, if you're trying to get pregnant, you don't want to be messing with your hormones. How does it affect fertility? And is there anything you can do to kind of improve that effect?
The first thing to stress is two-thirds of women who have endometriosis will have no problem getting pregnant. So okay. I think this is something I always stress when I'm telling a patient for the first time that they have the disease, because it's often something that's at the forefront of their minds. The second thing to say is that in those women who do have trouble getting pregnant, a lot of the treatments that we use, for example, IVF, can often be very effective. So I think we always try and be as reassuring as possible to women with the condition. In terms of treatment, you're quite right. Hormones aren't an effective treatment for women trying to conceive. It used to be thought that maybe giving, you know, a 6-month treatment of the pill would then help people become pregnant when they came off the treatment. That's definitely not the case. And so the options available for women with endometriosis are either to have the disease removed. And if they have peritoneal disease, that often responds very well to surgical removal of the disease. And these women then go on to get pregnant without any help. Women who have endometrioma, deep disease, will often require IVF treatment. And again, mm-hmm. this can often be very successful in this group of women. So we do try and be very positive. But clearly also, sadly, there are some women who, despite these interventions, who have endometriosis, still struggle to get pregnant.
I mean, if you know, you've explained that it's outside your uterus. So why does it prevent you from getting pregnant, or prevent some people from getting pregnant?
That's a really good question, and something that certainly there are many researchers trying to understand throughout the world. So one reason is that tissue, as I say, causes inflammation. So it may be that inflammatory environment prevents the embryo from forming properly, from embedding into the lining of the womb and developing as a normal pregnancy. It may be that the tissue affects the transport of the egg or the embryo in the fallopian tube, mm-hmm. Or it may be that it affects the quality of the egg itself that's produced from the ovary. So there are a number of different theories as to why it might cause infertility, but the truth in the answer is we don't really know, and it's one of these questions that really needs answered.
And what about miscarriage? Is there an increased chance of miscarriage if you are a sufferer?
Yes, and this is largely based on data, what we call epidemiological data, so mm-hmm. data looking at a large number of women and following them up over the course of many, many years. It does seem to be that you do have an increased risk of miscarriage. Again, we don't fully understand why that is.
And how increased is it? I know our listeners all want numbers.
Yeah, so the estimates at the moment are that it's increased between 2 to 4 times. But these are based on populations of women. For example, there's a very nice study that I was involved in Scotland, which looked at this, and then another population of women based in the States. So you have to interpret this data with caution, because it may be simply related to that population that was studied. But it does certainly look as if there is an increased risk.
Okay. And I mean, if you are trying to conceive and you are trying to reduce your symptoms, is there anything that you can do that's not kind of medical management? Is there anything you can do about your diet, or do more exercise, or anything like that you can do to reduce your symptoms?
It's a good question. So we tend to use a number of alternative, or offer a number of alternative strategies in our service that are used for other chronic pain conditions. So you're quite right. Exercise can often help with painful symptoms. Again, we don't fully understand why. Sometimes changing your diet can be helpful. There are a lot of diets that are said to be specifically for endometriosis. I would question that. I think what's important to do is to look at your own diet and try and remove things or add things and see if that has any impact upon your pain, rather than necessarily follow something that's specifically set out, perhaps on the internet, because a lot of these things don't have an evidence base.
So just avoid forums.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, there are other treatments that people find helpful that are used in chronic pain, like mindfulness, complementary therapies like acupuncture, uh-huh. Can sometimes be helpful as well. So it's partly about working out what helps you, and, you know, ensuring that none of these treatments are going to cause you any harm.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I've got one more question.
Pleasure.
And that's, you know, if people are suffering, is there any kind of hope that you can offer them? Are there any studies, or is there any potential treatment that's in the pipeline that may be available at some point soon?
Well, in Edinburgh, I'm fortunate that I have a fantastic team of researchers working with me. And over the last 3 or 4 years, we've been trying to understand why women develop endometriosis, in particular the peritoneal subtype of disease. And what we've shown by looking at samples from women undergoing surgery for endometriosis and also developing laboratory models of endometriosis is that women with the condition seem to have cells which behave metabolically differently within the pelvis and produce excess amounts of something called lactate. And having noted this and shown this in our laboratory studies, we then have been looking at treatments which have previously been tested in cancer, which are able to revert the cells back to normal metabolism and reduce the amount of lactate in the pelvis. And we first tested this in a mouse model of endometriosis, and we were able to show that these mice who had this treatment then developed a fewer number of lesions within their pelvis. And we're currently testing this in patients. We've got a study that's running in Edinburgh that's been running since Christmas time. Unfortunately, it's had to stop because of COVID-19.
Yeah.
But we'd already registered 8 patients on this new treatment. So obviously this is early days and we'll still need further work and further studies, but we're very excited that this could be potentially a new treatment for endometriosis. And the beauty of this treatment is it's not a hormonal treatment, so we'd anticipate that it wouldn't have any impact upon fertility.
Fabulous. So there is hope.
Yes, I'm always an optimist, and I really hope that in my lifetime we see better treatments and even a cure for endometriosis.
Okay, well, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Now it's time for
IVF.
What the
F? And what the F is the difference between a frozen and a fresh transfer?
Yeah, I like literally, when my clinic was like, well, we do fresh transfers and we do frozen transfers, it's your choice. I was like, what? But then after, because I did PGD, I wasn't actually, to be honest, I wasn't given a choice because they had to send off my little embryos to be tested.
As far as I'm aware, the way most clinics work is that you have to have a fresh transfer if everything is all right and that's what you can do. Mm-hmm. They very much encourage you to have a fresh. And then obviously you have frozen if, like me, you have risk of OHSS, or like Emma, you have PGD testing. And but yeah, it's kind of, I think we wanted to know, because there was some research coming out, wasn't there, about whether which was better and whether there is a difference in that.
I just think from a patient's point of view, it's about timing, isn't it? Like, you just want to get on with it.
Yeah, 100%. So I think everyone is a bit disappointed when they find out they have to have frozen, because you're just like, but I want it back in me now.
Yeah, absolutely. So we asked Professor Tim what he thought.
We did.
So clearly the traditional approach in IVF is to make fresh embryos, put the best embryo back, and maybe freeze some spare embryos. There is an approach where all embryos that are made are frozen, so you don't have a fresh transfer, and you then come back and have the frozen ones put back one at a time. This is called a freeze-all approach. And there's been quite a few studies recently reported regarding fresh versus frozen. In general, I think the study suggests that for women with normal ovarian reserve, so normal AMH, regular cycles, or even with low ovarian reserve, there's no advantage in planning to freeze everything. So the best approach probably is to go ahead with a fresh transfer. And if you're lucky and there are some spare embryos left over, then by all means, freeze those for later use. The situation may be different for women with high ovarian reserve, so PCOS or very high AMH. The studies that have been done in those groups of women suggest that perhaps because of the higher hormones they have at the time of egg collection, embryo transfer, that perhaps freezing the embryos and then once things are settled down after a few weeks, coming back for a frozen cycle may improve the success rate by a few percent. It may also, I think it does also, reduce the risk of ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, or OHSS, which is the main side effect or main risk of IVF. And certainly women with PCOS and a high AMH are more at risk of OHSS. So therefore, a freeze-all approach may be beneficial in terms of a slightly higher percentage success rate and also a lower risk of OHSS. A downside of a freeze-all approach, though, is, unsurprisingly, it delays time to pregnancy. So there are some sort of pros and cons both ways there, really. And I think, again, it's a time when your local clinic, your clinic will have their own view on fresh versus freeze-all approach and have a discussion with them. And I think sort of take their guidance on that.
And that's a wrap. A chicken wrap. That's a chicken wrap.
I would love a chicken wrap right now.
Would you?
It's like number 578 on the list of things we can't do.
Yeah, the other day I was like, I just really want a Twix. I just want a Twix. But I can't just run to the shop and get a Twix.
People on my street run to the shop and get a Twix.
Do they? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I try not to
In groups of three or more.
Oh, no. Come on, guys.
I know. Big love to Liz and Nick.
Big love to Liz and Nick. Big love to Professor Andrew Horn.
Yeah, big love to Professor Tim Child.
Big love to Peanut.
Big love to the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists for setting up the interview.
Big love to all our listeners.
Yes, and big love to Acast for hosting.
Oh, just love all around, guys.
Yeah, so much love. Next week, we are talking about cancer and infertility. It's an emotional one.
It is.
That interview, we did it back in July.
Get your Kleenex out, basically.
Yeah, it was, just one of the most kind of honest, brave interviews we've done.
Definitely, yeah.
So, back
with that one next week.
To that one. Yay. Yeah.
All right, guys, have a good week. Stay safe.
Stay safe.
Love you. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.